From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Welcome to the Wildcast podcast. I'm Star Sports Editor Ryan Finley here with Michael Love. Michael, it's been a few weeks. Thank you for stopping by.
Of course.
It's funny, there's no off season when it comes to football. We learned that a long time ago. And, you know, even here, we've got a little bit of a rundown of sort of what's new in the football, in the world of Arizona football, shall we say.
And sure.
I think we can just get right into it. Tell me about Grant Gunnell.
Yeah, he is a 6'6", four-star rated quarterback who was previously committed to Texas A&M.
Right.
Where, of course, Kevin Sumlin and Noel Mazzoni were coaches.
Mm-hmm.
He decommitted from them in February. This is probably a month after Sumlin got hired here.
Okay.
And very recently, last week, in fact, he committed to Arizona, mm-hmm. which was a very big deal, I think, on a few levels. To me, the biggest deal is it's kind of affirmation
mm-hmm.
of a lot of the stuff we've heard about regarding okay. this new staff.
Okay.
They're going to recruit Texas. They're going to build on relationships. And that's kind of just kind of this buzzword that mm-hmm. I've heard a lot from Kevin Sumlin. And they took advantage of both of those things to secure verbal from this big-time quarterback who participated in the Elite 11
right.
competition recently. Like I said, he's a four-star prospect by both 247 Sports and Rivals, a top 100 or so player in the country. Mm-hmm. And just kind of a sign that, hey, you know what, Arizona can bring in big-time players from Texas or elsewhere. They are not going to, they're not going to accept whatever standards were set by the previous staff. They're going to aim higher.
If we're making a list of every player Rich Rodriguez signed at Arizona from a national reputation standpoint, and then we're making a list of the three that Kevin Sumlin has signed for Arizona, would Grant Gunnell be at the top of Rich Rod's list? Is he a better on-paper football player than anybody Rich Rod signed?
It's a good question. I mean, I would say if you look at just the ratings, mm-hmm. that's probably kind of on par with Anu Solomon.
Right, okay.
Right? Who, I mean, that was a pretty big-time guy
yeah,
coming out of a big
school. He lost
school, big
two high school games, yeah.
Right, and he made a huge splash in his redshirt freshman year.
Mm-hmm.
And then things kind of went a little bit sideways for him and for a variety of reasons, injuries. You know, we'll never maybe know what impact, you know, that Fiesta Bowl fiasco had on him and his relationship with Rich Rod
mm-hmm.
and just Anu's confidence. Anu was, as, you know, most of our listeners probably know, an interesting character.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a, I don't know, fragile ego
mm-hmm.
in a lot of ways. Not the typical kind of alpha dog quarterback
right.
At all. But that would be the one that I would say is probably on par with
right.
this one.
Right. Anu Solomon was a study in contrasts, shall we say.
Sure.
Played the big alpha dog position, was not an alpha dog. Came from a family where his father was the alpha dog. Was quiet, was thoughtful, sensitive maybe.
Yeah.
And Rich Rodriguez's response, if I remember correctly, and I'm dating myself, I believe Rich's response to the Fiesta Bowl was he didn't talk to Anu Solomon for 4 months. I'm guessing when you're the starting quarterback at a school and your head coach won't talk to you, that's probably not so good.
Right, right. And for those who aren't aware, and I'm sure if you're listening to this podcast, you probably know, but Anu basically made a bad decision at the end of that game, right?
Yeah.
He could have thrown the ball away or run out of bounds,
took a sack,
time ran out.
Yep.
Yeah.
After had... I believe they would have needed to score and hit the two-point conversion to force overtime. Had they done that, it would have gone down maybe as the greatest bowl comeback in the history of bowl comebacks. He was that close to being a hero. But, God, he was, what, a sophomore? Freshman? I mean, redshirt freshman?
Yeah.
He's 20 years old to expect somebody to do that on the grand stage. Anyway, we're getting off topic here. Like you said, I think what makes the Grant Gunnell thing interesting is people were... When they hired Kevin Sumlin, I think we were able to look beyond maybe the way he finished at Texas A&M and some of the questions about his ability to win games by saying, but he'll recruit, and he'll recruit Texas, and he'll recruit quarterbacks. And boom, quarterback from Texas, off the board. We can argue, I think, all day about sort of what he might project to being down the road. I know he struggled at the Elite 11 camp. But my goodness, in person, he has the measurables that you look for in a franchise caliber quarterback.
Right. And he's super dedicated, too. I was talking to his dad the next day or a couple days later just about his schedule. I mean, this kid gets up at 4:15 in the morning, leaves the house at 4:30, works with a personal trainer from 5 to 6 a.m. Then he'll go and, you know, work out with the team,
right?
You know, from 6:30 to on or 7 to 9 or whatever. And this is the off season, right? I mean, imagine sort of fitting all that into a school schedule. And he's asleep by 9 p.m. so that he can get up the next day and do it all over again. He has put up crazy numbers at this school, St. Pius, in Houston, this private school. And I've heard they're going to have kind of a tougher schedule this year. So maybe we'll see him, you know, against some higher level competition. And it's always just a bigger deal when it's a quarterback, right? I mean, we all, of course, make a huge deal out of the quarterback position. But now when you kind of stack it up, look at the future here at that spot, you're bringing in Kevin Doyle, who is a late get by someone in Mazzoni. A lot of people like him. You're bringing in Jamari Joyner. And you've got Gunnell committed. So from, you know, Khalil Tate onward, I mean, things are kind of looking pretty good at the most important position.
And if you look at the two guys someone kind of sought out and signed now in Doyle and Gunnell, those guys, I think, look a certain way. I mean, they are prototypical. If we're going, who of the Mazzoni quarterbacks do they remind you of?
Brock Osweiler,
both
Josh Rosen, right?
Yep, exactly. Yeah. I look at both of them
guys.
And I go,
yeah,
baby deer, kind of, you know, you know, all legs, big arm, sort of Brock Osweiler is just the name that jumps out. Where Khalil Tate isn't that guy at all. I mean, Khalil Tate, we can make ourselves crazy listing comps, but, you know, who was the guy who Rich Rod compared him to last year? The guy was quarterback for Jaguars 20 years ago.
Who, Rich Rod did?
Yeah, Rich Rod compared.
Oh, I think that was me, actually.
You, Rich Rod, same difference.
I think I said David Garrard.
David Garrard, that's it. Okay, so it was you? Okay.
Because he's, the reason I brought up David Garrard is because Khalil's so, like, physical.
Right.
You know, like, he looks like he could, if he bulked up a little bit, like, he could almost be a fullback. And that's what David Garrard brought to the table, is that kind of physicality to the quarterback position in addition to all the other traits. But I think the one thing about Mazzoni, and we've talked about this before, is his offense is pliable. Right? Like, he can adapt to the skill set of the quarterback. But that being said, it does look like they're looking at some pro-style guys, bringing in one and then, you know, getting a commitment from another.
Not all the recruiting news has been good. We learned here yesterday that Logan Wilson, who was a DB out of where? Dallas, right? Dallas, and the first player to commit to their 2019 class. He's decommitted, and when something like that happens, I know, Michael, you and I talked about this a little bit yesterday, your mind goes to two places, right? He's either what? Go ahead, explain it to the
folks. Like, either they kind of gave him the message that, hey, you know, maybe you're not quite what we're looking for, and we're going to recruit better guys. It would be in your best interest to look elsewhere. Or he's starting to get a lot of interest from a lot of other schools, and he thinks he can go somewhere bigger and better than Arizona.
Right, but when you look at the other schools that have recruited him, or at least have offered him scholarships, it's possible that it's the former and not the latter.
Right. I think the only Power 5 that he had an offer from was Iowa.
Okay.
I think the others were all in the group of five. But recruiting is so weird, and it's so unpredictable, and I try not to make, you know, such a big deal out of a kid decommitting.
Right.
Even though it was the first guy and he seemed to be very gung-ho about Arizona.
Right.
These are kids.
Right.
And they change their minds and they get ideas about things. And
sure,
who knows, maybe he'll come back into the fold.
Right.
Later on, we have seen that happen. I think more than, it's happened more often in recent years where guys have decommitted and then recommitted to the same school. In the case of Braxton Burmeister, he decommitted, recommitted, and then decommitted again, which is a whole other story. But I wouldn't make that big of a deal out of this. I think getting Grant Gunnell into the fold is a much bigger bigger deal than Logan Wilson decommitting. But it was a surprise to people, even within the recruiting community who know a lot more about this than you or I, that this happened.
Rich Rod, when he was at Arizona, was a guy who said, you know, if you're committed to us, you're committed to us, right? Being committed is like being married, right? if you're still looking other places, maybe you're not married, which is insert punchline here. With Kevin Sumlin, do we have any idea of what Kevin Sumlin thinks about a kid who verbally commits to them but continues to take visits, or a kid who says he wants to be a part of them but only as a silent commit? I know that we haven't gotten down that road yet, but how realistic is Sumlin to kind of the impulses of kids?
Yeah, my guess, we haven't asked him this specific question. We haven't had that many opportunities to ask those types of questions. Those
no, you have not.
Opportunities will be coming up.
Yeah.
But my guess is that he will sort of take the player side of it, mm-hmm. because that seems to be where he leans with most issues, right? Mm-hmm. He seems like a player's coach,
mm-hmm.
and he wants his interests are whatever the best interest of the player is.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's where he would lean. My guess is that that's where he'd lean.
Mm-hmm.
On that subject, that he wouldn't kind of create a lot of conflict or rancor, you know, because it's not good for business to do that, because other players see and hear that, and they don't want to necessarily play for a coach who's super rigid.
Well, and it's funny, we talk a little bit about the coddling that some of these high school kids get or college kids get, but look throughout all of sports. I think that we're moving into an era where the coach is someone who's an advocate for the players as opposed to a father figure for the players.
Mm.
I mean, let's look at Steve Kerr in basketball. Let's look a little bit at Ty Lue in basketball, too. I'm not super familiar with hockey. It seems like the managers now, Aaron Boone, Joe Maddon, guys who are being hired and brought in are people who are far more advocates for players than they are disciplinarians, or people who are going to teach you to do things or play the game the right way.
Right. I still think there are a lot of coaches like that in football just because of the nature of the
football
game.
Right.
But I agree with you. I mean, let's look at Urban Meyer.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Urban Meyer is not, you know, I think he's changed. I think he's learned a lot from his Florida days, and he may very well be the same guy at his core at Ohio State, but I get the impression from afar that he's a little bit more lenient or a little bit more understanding of the players' desires and hopes and wishes and temperament and all of those things.
Well, and let's look at the two coaches who I think modernized and changed the Pac-12. That would be Pete Carroll at USC, who you're intimately familiar with.
Sure.
Very much an advocate for his players. And then Jim Harbaugh, who's, I think it can be said here, a little nuts.
Yes.
But somebody who I think sort of straddles that line. Right, I think that he is a fierce advocate for his players. If he can butt up against the NCAA rules by taking 100 people to the Vatican for spring football, he'll do that as an opportunity to give his players that stuff. But he also, I think, fancies himself the old school ball coach with the black horn rimmed glasses and, you know, the Sans Belt shorts.
Sure, I would also throw Chip Kelly into that group of coaches who have had the biggest influence on Pac-12 football this century.
Yeah.
And the one thing I would point out about him is that, you know, he was very into, and still is into, sports science,
right?
And kind of like, how can we maximize the players, I don't know, nutrition and sleep habits and all those things. And those are also something that you're helping your players by really delving into those areas. So I think he fits into that group as well.
That's a really good point. That's a very good point. Speaking of the Pac-12, a report out from USA Today's Brent Schrotenbear, who's for my money, one of America's foremost sports investigative reporters, and dives into the somewhat boring things and makes them interesting. The latest report on the Pac-12 is not good. It's that financially it's sliding behind all of the other major conferences, that we are this close, I'm putting my fingers about this far away from each other, from being passed by. The league is that close to being passed by the Big 12, the Big 10, everybody else.
Yeah.
And how tenable is that, and how long can that last before we see real change? Tell me what that story says and your thoughts.
Sure. Let's start with the headline: Panic in the Pac-12.
Ooh wee!
As conference quickly falls behind rivals. I mean, great headline, right? I mean, you want to read that story, and it sort of projects out over the next 5 years just how far behind the Pac-12 is going to be in terms of revenue from, mainly from TV contracts, right? I mean, that's the biggest source.
Right.
Compared to the other Power 5 conferences. And I've heard even people say, you know, that maybe it's the Power Four. And the Pac-12 doesn't even belong in that group. And this is just yet another reason that fans especially, and I think probably alumni and maybe even administrators at some of these schools are not happy with Larry Scott. Like, why has this happened? You know, like, how bad is the Pac-12's TV deal or deals that they're falling so far behind? And if I recall, when they signed these this latest round of contracts, they were viewed as great.
Yes.
Right? Progressive. But maybe... maybe there was a mistake made at that time and they didn't look far enough ahead, or the terms of the contract were too long and they should have given themselves an opportunity to renegotiate earlier than they have, because it seems like they're being lapped by these other leagues, which are bringing in a lot more money.
I think that there are comparisons, and watch me abandon half our listeners here, between what's going on there and what happens in our own business, the newspaper business.
Okay. Right?
I think the people in the newspaper business for years were so hung up on digital advertising that sometimes you forget that what pays the bills is the newspaper, right? I think that Larry Scott got so hung up on owning the digital rights to Pac-12 stuff and making sure that he had his own channel, make sure that he had all these restrictions on who could do what, right? That I think he forgot, for the most part, national television drives the bus.
Yeah.
And not only national television, but ESPN television at a reasonable hour drives the bus. And I think that everybody was so eager to get into that other world of getting ahead of the curve, so that when everybody's streaming everything on their phones all the time, the Pac-12 is at the forefront, that they forgot that you really kind of make your money and get your most exposure by putting the game on TV, so you and me and our moms and dads and people who watch TV but don't have phones can watch Pac-12 football.
Right. I have DirecTV. DirecTV still does not have a deal with the Pac-12 network.
Right.
Right? So that's, you know, I know that, you know, cable and satellite subscriptions are falling and so on and so forth, but I think that's still about 20 million people.
Right.
And I know a lot of people in the quote-unquote Pac-12 footprint have DirecTV. So that is a lingering issue that has not been resolved years and years later, right? Additionally, they made a huge deal at the time, and Larry Scott, I guarantee you, will defend this position. We own the Pac-12 network exclusively. Right. It's ours. We don't share it with a media entity, and eventually we're going to reap the benefits of that. Are they reaping the benefits of it? Will that ever happen? Was that a good idea? Is it too late to partner with someone? I know John Wilner is probably a better person to talk about all this stuff than us, but these issues are still going on, like, years later. And the content on the network is really good.
Fantastic.
Right? Right. I mean, if you're a Pac-12 fan, you love this stuff.
It's great.
It's just, it's just not in in enough homes compared to others.
Sure. I mean, it's so funny. You know, their studio show, I think especially for basketball, is just par excellence. I love the personalities who they've brought in for really all sports. It was better when Rick Neuheisel was there, obviously. But, you know, the Pac-12 does it right, but does it matter if nobody can see you?
Right.
You know, and just the things that your average viewer pays attention to. You know, I'll watch the Pac-12. I'm not above watching Pac-12 football in 60 at 11 at night when the kids are asleep in June. I don't care. I love that stuff. Guess who advertises on it? I can tell you, because there's three of them, right? I mean, you see the same commercials over and over again. You know, U.S. Bank, and then a house ad for, you know, hi, I'm Chip Kelly, and you're watching the Pac-12 networks. And then some sort of, you know, late night over the phone purchase thing for the shoe Dini. And then, hi, I'm Rich Rodriguez, and you're watching. I mean, it's, there are not, from my perspective, enough paying customers advertising on that show or on that channel. To me, that is a sign that it is fledgling. Who cares if you own the rights if nobody advertises and nobody can see it?
So how much, as a, this put your fan hat on, as a Pac-12 fan, does it bother you to know these two facts? One, Pac-12 is lagging behind all the other conferences, the other Power Five conferences, in revenue. Two, Larry Scott is the highest paid commissioner in all of those leagues.
Yes.
As a fan, Does that make you mad?
It's really bad optics. Yeah. I don't know if it makes me mad. I think it's really bad optics. And frankly, had Larry Scott been able to get DirecTV on board 2 years ago, I don't think we're talking about
it.
I think we're talking about the Pac-12 revenue is now falling behind because of maybe on-field things. You know, I still think, Michael Lev, that the Pac-12 can catch up to a lot of these other leagues by winning a national championship in bleeping something. You know, and
in football or men's basketball. They've won several in other sports, including our own, you know, Arizona women's golf team.
Sure, of course. Right? But in something watched, right?
Yeah.
To me, and you know, this goes back to style. I was talking about this with a random person the other day. What I love about the Pac-12 is how forward-thinking style-wise it's always been.
Yeah.
In football, especially. The Pac-12 threw when nobody outside of BYU threw. The Pac-12 did the Chip Kelly stuff when nobody was doing anything other than that. The fact is, though, in order to win a national championship, you need to play big boy football. And how many teams in the Pac-12 play big boy football? I'll answer that. Two and a half. I mean, USC does, and Stanford certainly does,
yes.
And Washington does sometimes. And that's all we got.
Yeah.
So if all of a sudden only three of your 12 teams can win a national championship, you're putting a lot of pressure on those three teams, aren't you?
You are, and I mean, it's been talked about a lot. Big problem for the Pac-12, the performance of its teams in bowl season last year.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that, you know, when those last four teams are announced for the college football playoff, the Pac-12 last couple years has been left out.
Right.
I mean, Washington plays Auburn in week one.
Mm-hmm.
That is a huge game for the conference. If the Huskies lose that game,
it's almost an elimination game.
It could be viewed that way because the Pac-12, as happened in the baseball selection show tournament and all that, Pac-12 is not going to get the benefit of the doubt.
Right. You're right.
So, let me ask you something.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the fact that the Pac-12 media days is now a Pac-12 media day is a reflection of panic within the conference, concerns about economics, that they don't want to pay rent at Hollywood and Highland for 2 days when they can only pay it for one, or is that just a coincidence?
I think it's just a coincidence, and you've been to these things. You can cram the meaningful stuff in. It could be Pac-12 media morning. If you got everybody you wanted to get one after another, you'd be out of there by lunch. That said, isn't that an even worse look? If they're starting to trim expenses in places like that, while Larry Scott continues to be the highest paid commissioner in sports, or in college football, in college sports, there we go. Yeah, it's a bad look. I don't know. Like, I'm not sure replacing Larry Scott is the issue, but I think that if Larry Scott could fix the DirecTV problem, and it's a problem, and if Larry Scott could help negotiate a better deal with, you know, ESPN and Fox, frankly, all of a sudden, I think things would trend in the right direction.
Right. Well, those are big what-ifs, and I don't even think he has the opportunity to do the latter for several years until the contract is up, unless there is some out clause that I'm not aware of that gives them a window to renegotiate. The good news about the one-day Pac-12 media day is that Khalil Tate will be there.
Hey,
there we go. He's a junior. Now, it may seem obvious to people that Khalil Tate would be one of the representatives for Arizona, but that hasn't always been the case.
Not under Rich Rodriguez. Yeah.
I'd say most of the schools, maybe 75% of them, would bring seniors to this, even if they were really not well known. It's kind of like, oh, it's a reward. It's a cool trip to LA. You're a senior. You've put in all the work.
Right.
The Pac-12 kind of put its foot down a little bit this year, and we're getting players who aren't seniors but who are stars, who are quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Another example, N'Keal Harry, maybe the best pro prospect in
no
the
question.
Pac-12,
yeah.
Is going to be one of ASU's representatives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jake Browning is going to be there. Steven Montez is going to be there. Manny Wilkins is going to be there. He might have been there anyway because I think he's a senior coming up. But Colin Schooler, true sophomore, is going to be there representing Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Some teams are bringing two offensive players. Some teams are bringing two defensive players.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to me that the league is recognizing that this is what the media wants. And this is not just a selfish media thing. As a fan, you'd think you'd want to hear from, like, the biggest star player.
Of course.
Right? And I think finally we're going to get that at this one-day Pac-12 Media Day. Well, what do you think about that?
Oh, I'm great with it. And it's funny. When I was covering football, it was a little bit of a different time. where, you know what, Pete Carroll brought his studs, and Jim Harbaugh brought his studs, and they'd bark at each other at media day. And there was always a story. And you felt like, even if it was just for an afternoon, that kind of football was back. At some point, it became a chance to further the message of your coach, and not a chance to bring your best players, right? I mean, you saw Mike Leach would bring, you know, he'd bring a punter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Rich Rodriguez would bring his, you know, fifth-year senior guy who he really likes, even if that guy's kind of big picture irrelevant.
Or just relatively unknown.
Right.
Outside of
right.
that particular precinct.
Right. And to me, and maybe this is a Pac-12-wide thing. Maybe the Pac-12 is sitting there going, the only way we're going to get on more TVs, we're going to get more eyeballs to watch us, is if we thump our chests a little bit. And that's very much not a Pac-12 thing, right? I mean, my goodness, they call it the Conference of Champions, Michael Lev. It's almost shining a light on the tennis and the golf instead of the football and the basketball. I believe, top to bottom, the Pac-12 is the most unique and perhaps most accomplished league in all of America. They don't seem to believe it, though.
I mean, it's true from top to bottom. Let's look at it this way. Like the sports are a roster.
Okay? Yes.
If you looked at the roster mm-hmm. from 1 to however 30.
Right.
Okay, let's say there's 30 sports.
Right.
No one can touch the Pac-12.
Nobody.
Right? Like all right. the quote-unquote Olympic sports.
Yep.
More championships than anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But who's got the superstars, right?
Right?
The superstars on the roster.
Right.
Football and men's basketball.
Yep.
Those are the things that matter the most. They're the ones that bring in the most revenue. They get the most eyeballs. They get the most attention.
Mm-hmm.
And over the last couple of years, this last academic year especially, Pac-12 completely tanked in those two sports.
And I will go a little bit more out of left field here. I also think that perhaps the university presidents and the people who make the decisions perhaps find it untoward to be thumping your chest about football and basketball. I think that when you look at the universities that are a part of the league, maybe Stanford and Cal doesn't think it's necessarily super important to put your best football player out there. Maybe they don't understand the value of talking about how great you are, right? I know USC certainly does. They have a long, hard-earned reputation for talking about how great they are. But, you know, maybe that's it. And maybe, and here's my unpopular take of the day, maybe every school in the Pac-12 would benefit by thinking and talking a little bit more like USC and a little bit less like Stanford.
Interesting. The one thing I'll say, one additional thing I will say about
right.
Pac-12 Media Day
right.
is that no matter who, what players are brought to this thing, and it is, as I said, a pretty star-studded group, more impressive list than in recent years. The coaches, this year especially, are going to be the show.
Incredible.
You've got Kevin Sumlin. You've got Herm Edwards mm-hmm. being added to the mix. You've got Chip Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're bringing a lot of that
mm-hmm.
positive attention
mm-hmm.
To the league. And everyone's going to want to hear what those guys have to say.
No question.
On that day in late July.
And it's so funny, too. You talk about the guys who I think might have the best chance of winning the league. They're not the big name coaches. They're not the brand name guys. I mean, Clay Helton, you know as well as anybody, probably as close to anonymous as a big time college football coach can be.
Chris Peterson. I would say he would make every top 10 list
mm-hmm.
of the best coaches. But if you asked, I don't know, survey of fans in the SEC, who's the coach at Washington? I said most of them probably don't know.
Right. How about Kyle Whittingham? Kyle Whittingham, all he does is win 8 games a year.
Yeah.
He wins 8 games a year when they're good. He wins 8 games a year when they're bad. He wins 8 games a year with no quarterback. He goes through his offensive coordinators every other season. He still wins 8 games a year. If we're doing a list of the most underrated coaches in all of college football, I would put Kyle Whittingham at 1 or at 2.
Sure.
Super impressive. You know, and it's funny, he's not one of the name guys, right? The name guys are Mike Leach and Kevin Sumlin and Herm Edwards. My goodness, I may ask you to just put a tape recorder by Herm Edwards and just let it leave it there. Real quick before we wrap up here, Michael, obviously two new rules announced today in the NCAA. Tell me about them and what you think.
Right. One is related to transfers.
Mm-hmm.
And as I understand it, they basically, you don't have to ask permission anymore
mm-hmm.
to transfer. You just kind of put your name into some sort of a database, it just gives a little bit more power to the student athletes.
Sure.
You know, before there was this whole process and you had to get a letter, and sometimes the guys would tweet out the copy of the letter. Hey, you know, look, I've been given permission by the school to look elsewhere. And it seemed like schools themselves could put a lot of restrictions on where you could go.
Right.
Sort of like a non-compete clause in a way,
right.
Which is an interesting thing for someone who's not an employee,
right.
According to the NCAA anyway. There is kind of one loophole to this in that conferences apparently can still kind of...
they can legislate among themselves.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Right, which is kind of reminds me of how we have like federal laws and state laws related to certain things like the sports gambling. I think it's going to kind of be a state by state thing now that the door has been open.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's a perfect solution to the transfer problem, but I think it's a step in the right direction.
Absolutely. And then the other one is the redshirt rule.
Yeah.
And you think it's a long time coming.
Long time coming. I think it's a great idea. I don't know why it hasn't been in place years earlier. Basically, you can play up to 4 games now and keep your redshirt year.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas before, if you played in 1 game, you'd lose your redshirt year unless you got injured.
Right.
So, you know, looking at one example, Leif Freck, right?
Right.
The left tackle for Arizona, he played in 1 game as a freshman in a blowout.
Mm-hmm.
Coaches would admit, you know, after the fact, that was a mistake. We shouldn't have done that. So Leif, you know, in order to get a 5th year of eligibility, he had to file an appeal. The NCAA granted that appeal, but they penalized him because he played in 1 game. They said, okay, you have to sit out 2.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to sit out the first 2 games of this season. Had that rule been in place back then, wouldn't have been an issue.
Right.
He'd be able to play the full slate of games this year.
Mm-hmm.
The bad news for Arizona in particular with this thing is that it's not retroactive.
Right.
They're not going to say just anyone who... you know, anyone over the last 5 years who only played a handful of games, you get an extra year. No, that's not going to happen. It's going to be starting this year. So let's say a freshman who comes in. Let's say Christian Young, just to take an example. Safety from Texas, one of the higher-ranked guys from Arizona. He comes in this year. Let's say they have a rash of injuries at safety, and they were planning to redshirt Christian Young. They could throw him in the middle of the season for 3 games when that position's really thin. Then they could kind of put him back, you know, back on the shelf, as it were, and he would still have all of his eligibility moving forward. To me, that's a great idea. It's good for the teams. It's good for the coaches. It's good for the student athletes.
I know the way coaches operate, and that is... if the speed limit's 55, they're going 54.9. Is there any chance that this can be, I don't know, taken advantage of? Could you redshirt a bunch of freshmen until week 11, then all of a sudden some guy who nobody's ever seen on tape is playing running back for you, and that's not going to, you know, you can play in week 11, week 12, and then in your bowl game, and then it doesn't count. Right? I mean, it doesn't count towards the guy's eligibility.
I mean, I guess it's possible that that could happen. Mm-hmm. Some people have raised those objections.
Mm-hmm.
What I would say is if a player's good enough to play, they're going to play him.
Right.
They're not going to intentionally hold guys out for strategic purposes. Like, Alabama, we know they have more talent than anyone, but I can't see Nick Saban saying, oh, this guy's really good. Let's save him for the Iron Bowl.
Right.
You know, they're going to play. You're going to play your best guys right off the bat, no matter what class.
And unless you're Nick Saban, you don't have the kind of job security that allows you to think about 4 years from now.
Right.
Right? I mean, that's what we joke about. 4 years is an eternity.
Or even 4 weeks from now.
Yeah, it's an eternity. Yeah. I mean, who's the dean of Pac-12 coaches right now?
Is it probably Kyle Whittingham, right?
Well, yeah. Yeah, it's got to be.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's even close.
Who's after that? Mike Leach?
is it Mike?
Right? It might be.
Could it be David Shaw?
Possibly. I mean, isn't that crazy, though?
David Shaw or Mike McIntyre?
God.
And I would guess it's probably David Shaw. I don't have that information in front of me. But
my favorite, strategically, my favorite coach in a league full of geniuses might be David Shaw. Love David Shaw. Anyway. All right. We were supposed to talk about U of A baseball. There is no time for that. outside of to say they lost 2 guys who they thought they were going to lose, and now we wait. Am I right?
Austin Wells, catcher. Remember that name?
Yes.
He's coming.
Okay.
And that's probably the best news that came out of the draft for Arizona.
Okay.
So
right, because Matthew Liberatore and Gorman.
Nolan Gorman, yep.
Nolan
Gorman. We knew those guys weren't coming, and they aren't. And Jay Johnson was prepared for that, and I think they're going to be okay.
Good deal. Well, that will do it for this episode of the Wildcast. I would call this a double episode or
jam-packed. Kind of like Pac-12 Media Days. We pack like 2 episodes worth of stuff into 1 episode.
Into 1 episode. This is fantastic. Michael Lev, can we do this again before both of us go on vacation?
Of course.
Excellent. For Michael Lev, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.